Siren Radio. Where the music you love lives.
Excellent. Weather today, highs of 5 degrees centigrade, lows of minus 3 degrees centigrade. It'll be a dry day with some sunshine, and the patchy mist that you might have been experiencing, it'll clear.
Prime ministers and presidents may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions remains.
Quite right, too. Coming up on the programme today, Richard Fitzwilliams will be joining us to talk about The Shape of Water and I, Tonya, plus a unique take on the BAFTAs, because we are, of course, in the awards season. You will have caught the Brit Award announcements as well over the news. We've also got Ian Lennox, journalist, producer and writer, with his unique Tyneside perspective. James Hookham will be talking about the Freight Transport Association's response to Brexit. Yes, the B word is going to be mentioned. And David Gleave will be discussing air traffic accidents, airport crashes, and other weather-related incidents when it comes to fear of flying.
I see the moon, oh, when you're looking at the sun.
Double Brit Award winner Dua Lipa. And Be The One. I wonder if she'd actually won three awards, would she have changed her name to Trio Lipa? Just a thought. Last night we forgot to give a name check and a dedication and a request to one of our Ace Midweek Drivettes. That was Katie Grimerson, based in Birmingham these days, doing fantastic things with a whole variety of other aspects. In fact, looking after cats, which brings us neatly round to the joys of Ian Lennox. We'll find out more about cats as well. But Katie, this one is for you.
Yeah.
Somewhat strange that Katie Grimmison was a major Gallagher Brothers fan, but still, there we are, that's life, and they're a very good band, as indeed one of the Gallagher Brothers proved at last night's Brit Awards. Isn't that right, Tessa Snart?
It is.
Yes, exactly. Which, of course, means that we have the opportunity to play this.
Plinton has now officially been put on the broadcasting map, with Tessa Snart taking midweek drivette duties to a whole new level.
Yes, you see, Richard, we were sort of thinking, oh, you know, Tessa's not going to be there. We've forgotten all about the awesome Richard Fitzwilliams, of course.
No, never.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm delighted to hear it. I'm reassured.
Yeah, well, and so you should be, unlike, of course, the attempt at humour that Jennifer Lawrence made at the BAFTA ceremony, which just didn't work at all. Jennifer, please. You know, and then there was Joanna Lumley, and then they were talking whilst other people were giving... Oh, it was a disaster. Bring on Ricky Gervais next year, that's what I say.
Firstly, we just emphatically, definitely, certainly, and absolutely don't want Vicky Gervais anywhere, but I totally agree that, I mean, Joanna Lumley is, I think, enchanting. I've always liked her, and I've always been an admirer. I've met her at the Royal Society.
One of my first interviewees, actually, Joanna Lumley was. She bought me tea in Brown's Tea Room when I did the interview back in the 80s. There we are.
Oh, how delightful. But it has to be said that she was stepping into shoes that a bit large for her because Stephen
Fry.
Yeah,
but I mean, he's got big feet, hasn't he? I mean, it's not Joanna's fault that Stephen's got particularly big feet.
Unfortunately, 12 years and, let's be frank, I mean, Stephen Fry had absolutely splendid innings and he felt it was time to step aside, and that I felt. I remember we missed half an hour of the real show. I wish they'd show the BAFTAs live. Apparently 2.5 hours would be too much for an audience.
And people might be uttering obscenities and so on. You know what actors are like when they get together? They're just like potty mouth all over the place.
But you occasionally have to see that or hear it. I mean, the thing is, there is always a very, very, with the Oscars and the Globes, they have a tiny time-lapse so that such obscenities can be removed. The whole point, unfortunately, and especially in the era of social media, I mean, I was in the Al Jazeera studio and I was waiting to try and find out who'd won because instantly they were going to interview me afterwards. The point is it's all on Twitter, and in these days you really, really cannot hold some sort of magic board up before clouding out the results. You can't do that. I think it is a matter of the time the awards take, because as you know, at the end of the two-hour compilation we see in the BBC, they quickly show you the technical awards. But Joanna Lumley apparently had or an attempt to be amusing, as though she were part of the films that were nominated.
She needs Jennifer Saunders, you see, to do that, to actually be amusing. She's kind of, when it comes to comedy, and Joanna, we do appreciate you, she really needs to actually have a funny sidekick or vice versa. She does the straight routine perfectly, but you know, other than that, you know.
The other trouble is, if you took away the superlatives, what would be left?
Well, Jennifer Lawrence presumably.
Unfortunate, but having said that, the BAFTAs I thought were staged pretty well. I mean, I totally agree with and thought it came across very powerfully, the Me Too and Time's Up movement that you've actually got both here and in the United States, of course, where it started from last October. You've got a movement that is gathering force, that is not going to be halted in any way. In fact, it's getting a lot of funds, and it is attempting to help people. It's helping those who are suffering from abuse, harassment, the question of equal pay, and so forth. There's no question a lot or everybody wore black. The Duchess of Cambridge, well, I mean, she...
Was she wearing black? Was she supporting it? Was the Daily Mail correct?
The point was she was wearing bottle green.
Yes, and not black, though. Bottle
with
green.
With a black sash. Bottle green with a black sash. And, I mean, whatever she did, frankly, would have been commented on in one way or another. I mean, she couldn't really win there. But on the other hand, that was really just the press. Regarding the films, which, of course, is so pivotal, when Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri won Best Outstanding British Film, I thought that Dunkirk still had a chance.
No,
but of course,
no. Richard, I've told you, just forget it. You know, I'm sorry, it's not Christopher Nolan's worst movie, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, that's after Inception, that wouldn't be possible.
Oh,
but,
please, that had something to say about the human condition. That had something that was intrinsically wonderful. Dunkirk was a remake of the 1958 version, and it wasn't a particularly good one either.
Well, it certainly wasn't that, assured. But having said that, I fear, it was a lost cause, but one thing that did come across.
Much like Dunkirk,
is,
of
one
course.
One thing that did come across is that you had the extraordinary variety of the home product, because when in the category you've got movies as diverse as God's Own Country and Paddington 2, Darkest Hour, Three Billboards, of course, being a British film, which is very interesting because it's sort of classed as Anglo-American.
It's not going to win in the Oscars, I'm sorry. It might have done well, but the Americans don't like Three Billboards. They've sort of given up on it, unfortunately.
I understand that Shape of Water is accused of plagiarism, Three Billboards is accused of racism, and that only leaves Get Out and Lady Bird.
Well, you know, let's hope it'll be Lady Bird then. You know, although Get Out is an outside bet, clearly, in terms
an
of...
An outside bet, I would say. I said it didn't occur to me when I saw it that it would be in competition in this way. The Oscars, Lady Bird is absolutely enchanting. I would not say that it was the best film of the year, but there we are. We are where we are, and we certainly had a superb speech, I thought, from Gary Oldman, a wonderful performance as Churchill.
Although I have to say, once again, I'm sorry, Richard, I still think that actually Brian Cox, for me, in Churchill, the movie Churchill, as opposed to The Darkest Hour, in which Oldman portrays Churchill, I felt that Brian Cox he nailed it slightly more coherently, I just felt. Just
I did not know. There again...
I did agree to differ.
No. I mean, not going to agree this morning, because, I mean, though we've seen various Churchills over the years, Albert Finney, Robert Hardy is very good, but, I mean, they didn't... I thought Cox, indeed, in a movie that was of mixed merit, certainly did his best and was extremely interesting. But for me, it's Oldman and then Lithgow.
Damned with faint praise, I think, Tessa. Extremely
well,
interesting.
The movie wasn't particularly good, one has to be honest. Frances McDormand obviously was going to win Best Actress, and so she did. There was always the vague chance Sally Hawkins might challenge, and she... Well, I mean, she challenged, but not successfully.
She will challenge, but she did a mute performance in Shape of Water, as we'll come to. So we'll
she did, of course, she had the performance in a rather good film. She was an artist, Maudie, as well. So that was a sort of backing up, but it wasn't enough. Sam Rockwell and Alison Janney were obvious. I thought Alison Janney just might have had a tough competition from Leslie Manville, but again, I'm sure she did, but it didn't. The glorious Monster Mother, which we'll be discussing in a minute, won over the somewhat austere and tough sister of Daniel Day-Lewis in a couture house in London in the 1950s. They spread around. Good to see James Ivory spread around. Good to see James Ivory at 89 getting an award for Call Me By Your Name, a marvellous movie. Costume design was obviously going to go to Phantom Thread and so forth. Guillermo del Toro, well, of course, see, I thought it would be Nolan, but no, it was del Toro.
Quite rightly so too. Quite rightly so too, which actually brings us around to another little bit of Leftchuk anecdotal time, because earlier this week I was forced with a word. Forced, that's too strong a word. I had the choice, actually, of Shape of Water or Black Panther. I thought, do I go and see something before Richard's going to review it, or do I actually go on the page? So I went and saw Black Panther. I think I possibly made the wrong decision. I think Black Panther, good movie, 7.5 out of 10 for me. Maybe a bit tad too violent. I think people have probably eulogised a wee bit too much about the system. I kind of felt Luke Cage in the Netflix series was slightly more on the nail if you're looking for diversification and so on. But yeah, it's okay, Richard. I couldn't necessarily sort of say it was my all-time favourite movie. Which...
The lack of enthusiasm, the damning with faint praise, to use your own phrase in that review, I can only express disappointment.
Yeah, well, I think once they'd actually done Korea and then they'd had the Bond-esque chase there in the casino scene, and by the time they actually got to Africa, I was just thinking, not another knockdown slug-out fest that's around
here.
No, but
I mean, there was, of course, the
nice ending,
ritual
though.
Fighting, which was part of their tradition in Wakanda, but I mean, the African scenes, the colour, the amazing way that they handled the visuals.
See, I just thought it was Tarzan with a different kind of cast, really.
No, but you're cheapening it now. I mean, in fact, you didn't like it at all. 7.5 was a mirage. You really thought would have given it 3.5.
No, I will give
the
it...
The only critic to do so.
I will give it 7.5 because I thought the ending was very much spot on. I loved the speech to the United Nations and the notion of, you know, what can farmers actually offer to the world. I thought that was excellent. But other than that, I'd say there were areas which I thought, didn't quite work. Maybe
3 minutes out of 2 hours you've come to now, that's generous.
Exactly, you know. And some movies, if you've got 3 good minutes, that's all you can actually ask for.
What a review. Shame.
Given that one of the reasons Phil Leonis isn't able to join us today is because he was having a screening of his relatively recent movie, The Lady Killers, which Lily Holloman was reporting on last night when they were heading off to San Jose. Tessie, you normally follow social media. Any news?
I've not seen any this morning.
Right.
I need to refresh my pages, but they usually keep you updated.
I just wanted to find out what the Q&A was like, what the response was like. If it's silence, I get a wee bit worried, really. You know, on the basis of, obviously, Richard, as you'll appreciate, one of our midweek drivettes, his movie out there, getting kind of reviews. I mean, if they have somebody like me who says, well, it had 3 good minutes in it, it could be a disaster.
It was a success.
Scathing form today.
Anyway, whilst Tessa checks out social media to find out what's happening with the San Jose Film Festival, let's not muddy the waters. Let's get straight into the shape of the water, and let's go into Guillermo del Toro and this awesome production with, of course, Doug Jones. And Doug Jones, of course, who actually portrays
the fabulous sea creature.
Exactly.
A very interesting interview I read with him doing this, or taking on, should I say, a role rather like this. But, Guillermo del Toro, he specializes in fantasy. And, of course, we had The Macabre and The Wondrous Pan's Labyrinth, which still remains my favorite film of his.
Hellboy.
Well, spectacular, yes. But definitely Pan's Labyrinth rather than Hellboy, for me. But set during the Cold War in 1962, Eliza Esposito, played by Sally Hawkins, is a mute. She commutes through sign language. She lives alone. She works as a janitor in a secret government laboratory. Her friends are Giles, played by Richard Jenkins, always a good actor, the gay illustrator, and Zelda Octavia Spencer, who serves as her interpreter. And the faculty she works at receives a creature in a large tank from a river apparently from the Amazon, which is brought by Colonel Richard Strickland, played by Michael Shannon. Eliza starts discovering what this creature really is. She visits it, she forms a bond with it, and when vivisection's ordered, there's also a Soviet spy ordered to euthanize it, she convinces Giles to help her and smuggles it, with Zelda's help, out of the laboratory and keeps the creature in her bathtub. More you will have to discover when you see this movie, but the facts for me were that anything like this, I mean, you could recite the story, and the movie could be either nonsensical and disastrous, or it could have that sort of poetic quality, that lyrical quality that you can sometimes get when you've got a movie of the very, very unusual type. But when it's beautifully directed, when the colour is fascinating, when they've got fine use of the music, and also when you've got a fine cast, and it's the latter, I'm happy to say, because the message is to appreciate those who are different and what they have to offer. And indeed, Doug Jones, in the interview, he said that the way he was able to, so to speak, communicate with humans as the creature, the way he felt their empathy when they touched him, rather sensitive, because it's skillfully handled. As I say, it could, love scenes between this rather extraordinary sea creature and Sally Hawkins, putting it mildly, somewhat unusual, but I was drawn into this film, and I mean the colors are remarkable. Del Toro really has directed something that's very special here. And yes, some fine performances, but most particularly that of Sally Hawkins, Octavia Spencer as Zelda, and Richard Jenkins as Giles, are both very good, though they don't have enormous amounts to do. I noticed that Octavia Spencer got a nomination of the BAFTAs, rather like Kristin Scott Thomas in Darkest Hour with Clementine Churchill. Again, the amount of time she's on the screen is pretty limited, and I don't think she really had a chance against Alison Janney, and also Laurie Metcalf was in competition for Lady Bird, but she was an early favorite, and then her chances faded. I found The Shape of Water fascinating. I was drawn in to a strange and surreal world, and Guillermo del Toro set this movie in the 1960s. It's a fantasy movie. It's usually for the future that we look to fantasy movies. In this case, it's going back half a century. And again, using pretty extraordinary. It's a gamble. I mean, bits of it are a gamble. The love scenes certainly a gamble, and it's sensitively handled, and it works. At least works for me. It is not my favourite of his films, and it's not my favourite film of the year. But I do think that it's well worth going to see and see how you respond to something so unusual.
Doug Jones, of course, Mr. Saru, the Kelpian from Star Trek Discovery. Can't go wrong with that. One minor point, Richard. Does it have echoes of Creature of the Black Lagoon or Creature from the Black Lagoon? Are we talking about Guillermo del Toro take on that classic 1950s black and white horror movie?
He was certainly influenced by it. I have never seen it.
Unbelievable. He's seen Lawrence of Arabia, but not Creature from the Black Lagoon. This is just a shock. Richard, dear, what you did. Tessa's having to pick herself off the floor with shock for that. Never seen Creature from the Black Lagoon. Dear Lord. But Tessa, would you be checking out The Shape of Water?
Yes, most definitely. It does look fascinating, like you say. And you've got to have some imagination to create a film like this, I think.
It's Toro-esque.
It does. It's very different, unique.
A new adjective, really, for the word. Toro-esque, as in Guillermo.
It's certainly unusual. And it's skillful.
Yeah. Margot Robbie, when she's not portraying Harley Quinn, seems to be actually carving open the whole notion of being borderline psychotics in various ways. And given that the Winter Olympics are actually in full force, and Eddie the Eagle Edwards has not been able to join us today. Sorry, Eddie, you're lost, but never mind. I see that I, Tonya, features figure skater Tonya Harding sorting out all manner of things in what's referred to as a faux documentary. Not a fake documentary, a faux documentary.
Well, the reference is to the technique which we've occasionally seen in various movies of talking to camera, and that's the way the movie opens. We get to meet the characters because they confide in us. They chat to us. This is one of the techniques used.
They break the fourth wall like Deadpool does.
The fourth wall. I read about the fourth wall, used as the fourth wall. I think most listeners probably wouldn't know what the fourth wall actually is. But if you see this...
Come now, Richard. Our Siren Radio listeners are highly intelligent. We can talk about the fourth wall at length, and I'm sure they'll say, yes, we know that.
Well, you could talk about Dunkirk at length, and look what they'd have heard.
step away from the beach, Richard. Step away from the beach, into the water.
Into the water, this particular movie. She asks to camera, oh, come on, what kind of freaking person bashes in their friend's knee? Who would do that to a friend, says Tonya Harding, played by Margot Robbie. And Robbie's performance is an absolute triumph, but the reference is to one of the most infamous events in sporting history, where her rival Nancy Kerrigan was deliberately injured at the Winter Olympics in 1994, and Harding was subsequently excoriated. But we get rather more intimately involved with the cast of characters when they talk to us, and I think you're glad you meet some of them at a distance, because part of this movie is an absolute farce. What we see, firstly, as Tonya, we're meant to empathise with her, and Robbie gives a very fine performance because we see her struggles with her abusive mother, Lavona, played by Alison Janney, and then her violent husband, Jeff, played by Sebastian Stan. Her personality only surfaces when she's figure skating, and there you've got the unique talent with the double axel which she's able to pull off and so forth, but she's basically white trash, regarded as a redneck and without sophistication. That's the way the judges look at her, because she turns up in costumes which certainly aren't fit for the occasion, and it's her heart. She's got a heart, she's resourceful. There's one scene where she fires a shotgun to scare off her husband, and we feel pretty supportive because it's the least he deserves. But the problem is she's got this mindset which, having always suffered, she continues to suffer. Alison Janney is splendid as a hate figure. I made you a champion knowing you'd hate me for it. That's the sacrifice a mother makes. She snarls at her. But it is, of course, through the mother that Tonya becomes such a figure skating genius. But Janney is memorable addition to the cinematic gallery of grotesques with her pet parrot. I mean, you really hate this brutal, manipulative, and totally unscrupulous woman, but she does play the role with shameless relish. She avoids, this is most important, it becoming caricature. But the actual event where Nancy Kerrigan is attacked and hospitalized, I mean, this enters the realms of the surreal. You, in a retaliation for an anonymous death threat, her husband tells her self-appointed minder, Sean Eckhart, not the brightest person in this world, played by Paul Walter Hauser, to retaliate. It's extraordinary what happened. To some extent, this is, I suspect, slanted to give the most favorable interpretation as far as Tonya's concerned, but as a movie, director Craig Gillespie, I think he challenges us to move out of our comfort zones and into the rough world that she inhabits, and it's really not a question so much of innocence or guilt, by association if you like, but of survival for her, and she really is only herself when she's figure skating, and that, of course, is her tragedy. She was banned from it. But it's a very quirky, unusual movie, and I really liked it.
Is it The Goodfellas of figure skating?
That I've seen elsewhere. Mm. It indeed is. Shall we say there could be a touch of The Goodfellas in it, because I have no spoilers, really, on what happens. It's just too bizarre. Go and see for yourselves.
There we are. So, Tessa, will you be checking out not I, Claudius, not I, Robot, but I, Tonya?
Oh, yes, this is definitely my kind of movie. Anything figure skating, dancing, but of course it's probably going to be quite emotional. I watched an interview with Tonya on Good Morning Britain, and they were really testing her about, you know...
They do that on the television, you know.
I know, really
it's not
testing
like the Midnight Drive Morning Edition, where we kind of allow people to have their own views, even if they're wrong, in the case of Dunkirk. <with them.
laughs> I could see that was coming up. Well done on cue.
But no, yes, I will be checking that film out.
Excellent. So we've covered the BAFTAs. We haven't talked about the Brits because... Well, you can see them all. We've already talked about it, and we're heading towards the Academy Awards season. I, Tonya, and The Shape of Water. Who knows, could be an outside bet, although probably not, because of the thoughts we've said that maybe Hollywood feel as though they're being manipulated into promoting The Shape of Water, as Phil Leonis has actually said. No news.
I would say that, I mean, it's a harsh judgment on the film. The point is, it's got a large number of nominations. That in itself doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it does show that there's excellence in a certain number of fields in the opinion of the various chapters. I mean, I would say that it has a chance because of the alternative voting system. Once they scrapped First Past the Post in 2009, I mean, look what we've seen. Firstly, you often divide Best Director from Best Film. That may or may not happen because Del Toro, I think, very likely to win for Shape of Water's Best Director, but by no means do we know who or will win what will win Best Picture. We simply don't know, because if you have an alternative vote, it really is too close to call, but that makes it more exciting.
And it's the uncertainty that makes life interesting.
It is.
Tessa, off you go. What are the two questions we need to put to Richard Fitzwilliams with the time now at 24 minutes to 9 a.m. in Lincoln, England?
Okay, Richard, have you had an interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, indeed I have.
And will you be returning to the show soon?
I certainly will be.
That's fantastic.
I've seen it in your eyes. I wanna be touching you. Now that you realize, I see it in your smile. You wanna be holding me too. So don't try to say the things you feel inside. Baby, just hold on tight. Share the night, 'cause I'm taking a chance on you. Taking a chance on you. Don't go breaking my heart in two. I'm taking a chance on you.
when the hour slips away. Wanna be holding you more. I know that you had to go, but I want you to know, never had this before. So don't try to say the things you feel inside. Baby, just hold on tight. If the feeling's right, stay here with me and we can share the night. Cause I'm taking a chance on you. Taking a chance on you. Don't go ripping my heart in two. Taking a chance on you.
As we do every week, Tessa, when we take a chance on Ian Lennox and hope he's in a reasonable mood, because you just don't know. He could be Mr. Grumpy, could be Mr. You know, we never know with Ian Lennox. It's that uncertainty, a bit like Richard Fitzwilliam's reviews, that just makes life just a wee bit more interesting.
Just keeps you on edge, doesn't it?
Good morning, Ian Lennox. How are you today?
Hello. You interrupt me composing a song about Wigan Athletic. Never mind.
That's an attempt at humour, Tessa. You know, I don't know why he's talking about. Maybe you can talk about people being
set off. Yes, you do know what I'm talking about, Alex.
Set off.
Stop being naughty.
I'm sorry, Wigan, they eat pies, I believe, as far as I'm aware. So we're, the focus is much more on the Carabao Cup these days. We don't want to sort of spend
time. You've got to do that, haven't you? Because you've got so much point focusing on the League Cup, is it?
Before too long, we'll be actually in a situation where people will be inquiring about sort of fear of flying. Are you scared of flying, Ian Lennox?
No, I was too stupid to be scared of flying, actually.
Well, new research...
Do you know what? One of my friends was the editor of an airline business, and he was became a very... I mean, he flew over the world, obviously. And he became a very bad flyer because he said, you don't know what can go wrong, I do.
Well, this is something we will be taking up with airline crash investigator David Gleave, who specialises in human error, air traffic accidents, airport crashes and weather-related incidents. And it would seem that from recent surveys that there are 21 million, in fact, over 21 million British folk are more scared of flying now than they were 10 years ago.
So, why's that?
Well, new research to support the brand new series of air crash investigation on National Geographic. That's not going to help matters, is it, really? You know, I mean, airing every Thursday at 9 p.m. You know, clearly, from that point of view, apparently we have trust in both pilots and cabin crew. It's not human error that British folk are more fearful about, but they're worried about engine failure, plane crashes, terrorism, turbulence, and a mentally unstable pilot. Well, I suppose actually any one of those in a combination could be not exactly ideal. Could be talking challenging. My solution, arm all the passengers. Sorry, only kidding. I was echoing my inner Donald Trump there. You know, why not? You know, it's not going to be a proper school experience, is it, Ian, unless we can actually have all teachers armed with guns as well.
Arm the cabin crew.
Exactly. Arm everyone. Just have a shootout. Only kidding.
What would you like? Coffee, lemonade, or an Uzi?
Do you know, that could have...
tax-free Uzi.
Clearly, the views of some of our correspondents do not echo those of Siren Radio. Just want to put that quite right. We're not advocating any such thing at this particular stage. Oh. But it is interesting. I was maybe taken about the fact that you've decided to share Donald Trump's son with...
Oh, yes. He's done, there's been quite a few pictures of the of the Suns shooting animals.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably from an armoured car, I should imagine.
Yeah, they're not going to wrestle with them, are they, really?
Oh, God, Lord, yeah. It's not exactly a fair contest, is it?
It's indeed.
Why do people do it? Like, why?
I think it's part of the primitive thing in our DNA when we're all hunter-gatherers, I assume.
Yeah, but there's a difference. There's a difference between an AKG repeating scenario and indeed, you know, a bow and arrow and something. As you've indeed said in another post that you shared, a new theory suggests the gunman didn't act alone, but was assisted by 52 senators, 298 representatives, and the National Rifle Association of America.
I don't think I agree with it. I just think it's, you know, the poor animals, they can't really fight back.
Well, exactly.
It's not really funny. I don't know how it can be a fun game, really.
It's not a game.
Whatever they're thinking.
Unless it's the game of life. But
no,
still.
It's just not fair, is it?
It's the sort of thing you think about when Wigan dare to actually have temerity to score a goal. In
shoot Wigan, are you going to do it now? Or did you say shoot when the Manchester City go over the halfway line?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, moving on. How's the weather in Newcastle?
He's always moving on when I'm winning. I'm fed up with this.
It's not a win. It's not a win. Please.
Oh yes, it is.
Oh no. Well, if that's
in a terrible state at the moment, because I haven't mentioned Newcastle United yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes I just feel we have to step aside from the sort of sequences that Rafa Benitez is going through, and let's just leave it.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. So. It's times like this, Tessa, I wish I hadn't reposted my review of...
Thank you, mate.
You know, I mean, he puts in a specific request to actually say, you know, since I actually updated the new spankingly wonderful Ura-free 99p edition of Bare Knuckle, all the reviews have actually vanished. Could you please repost yours? So I duly do that. And then all he actually does is give us grief about, you know... it's ridiculous.
Well.
You know, it's just
come on, City.
Yes. Yeah,
it's so, always the way.
Exactly. Tessa, have you ever been to Newcastle? I'm not sure whether you were, like, asked that question before.
I haven't, but I will be on March the 9th.
March the 9th, you're going to Newcastle.
Yes,
and
I am.
My pray tell, are you going to Newcastle on March the 9th, 2018?
I'm doing some voluntary work for the BBC Radio 3 Festival of Ideas.
So you will be at the Pink Palace.
I will be there for the whole weekend. So
you'll be within hopping distance of St James's Park.
Lucky
lady.
Yes.
The Pink Palace, which is actually pink, and has been referred, hence the reason it's called to as the Pink Palace, because for some crazy reason the BBC decided to actually locate in Tyneside as opposed to Teesside. A mad decision, which even today I still think was just crazy, but still.
They've all gone off to Salford now, anyway, haven't they?
Obviously they've left a kind of rump there so that Tessa can actually experience, you know, the BBC. In terms of, so allowing for that journey north, Tessa, and your first ever experience of Newcastle.
Yeah.
Ian is your man.
Yeah. Ian, where should I go? What should I check out while I'm there? Because I think I will have
Are you going on your own, or are you going with friends?
I'm actually going with a friend. One of my friends got the placement as well, so we're going down together. So she has a car. So, yeah, where should we go?
Well, Newcastle is a very small city centre.
Okay.
Fridays and Saturdays is absolutely jam-packed with young people getting drunk. It's the city of culture, you see.
That's okay.
I think what you should do is, during the day, just walk into town. You can walk down Grey Street, which is one of the finest streets in Europe, right down to the quayside, and you'll see the city. You can get a feel for it.
Yeah.
It can get a bit rowdy sometimes, so you've got to know where to go. So what I would do, when you get into the BBC, ask some journalists and think people, for advice.
Okay.
They'll probably say something like, the fog on the Tyne is all thine, all thine, the fog on the Tyne is all
There's
thine.
No fog on the Tyne.
Yes.
It's a beautiful space.
Not according to Lindisfarne. Anyway, hopefully that helps.
No, it does,
Are there any free...
I'll tell you what, take a camera as well, because you will be... I'm telling you, you'll be quite startled by some of the architecture.
Oh, I will be taking lots of... I love taking photos, and I love Instagram,
You could even pretend you're in Sydney, Australia, and take a photo.
Yes, there's a bridge that's similar to the Sydney Bridge. Mm.
Yeah, no, definitely, I'll be taking lots of photos. So.
Although it's not quite as warm as Sydney, Australia, I just want to...
Yeah, that's okay.
In fact, especially in March, I would actually make sure you have thermals, you have...
Oh, I will do.
fully wrapped tonight.
He's just being silly, that.
Ian, on your website, you have a shot of yourself in a T-shirt that's not taken anywhere near Tyneside. That's, you know,
where
just
is
that's
that?
Lord knows, but it certainly isn't Tyneside.
You look warm.
Yes. It's you're looking kind of wan and wistful. Really.
It's where you can...
I'm a lot younger than I am now.
I wouldn't know. I haven't actually met you face to face for about 10 years, Ian. So you could have changed beyond all recognition. You know, that's the key thing. But it's,
On the photograph, do I look reasonably similar to what the time when you were met?
Well, you've got your arms folded and you're leaning against this.
I've tried to make out what's actually said on the T-shirt. It's got things only better, something. Something. Hmm. It looks like it's in some kind of reservoir
environment. Lots of water behind you.
Nobody's liked it, so even though it is one of your featured
maybe
photos.
Maybe we should like should it. Should we like it? I think we should.
All right, we'll do it.
Give him a
like.
Do I follow?
Well, if I look vaguely young, it's at least 50 years old now, I'm telling you.
I wouldn't say it looks vaguely young there. Tessa is just checking whether she's stalking you or not. Ian, so.
Oh, yes, I do stalk you. I have you on Facebook. There you go, Ian.
It's not fair. I'm too easy to catch now.
Well, that's, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, that's what happens when, you know, you sort of work through the whole process. Don't worry, Ian, you won't be putting out the hashtag Me Too. I'm sure you won't. So just step away from the line on that basis. Any phrases?
I did get stalked once on Facebook, actually.
Oh,
dear.
Yeah. Well,
that's not good.
Well,
not stalked. No, it was a very mild stalking.
Well, don't worry, Ian, I'm not stalking you. I was just simply checking that I had you on Facebook as a friend.
So are there any phrases in terms of the vernacular, the Geordie vernacular, Tessa should do? Because she's from Glinton, obviously.
I am.
To the average northerner.
Well, I've got to tell you, I did live with a girl from Newcastle. Unfortunately,
she did.
So I've heard a little bit, but you might be
did
able to help me out.
Did you understand the word she was saying?
Sometimes not.
No.
And when she'd go back home and then come back after holidays, it'd be a lot. The accent would be so strong. And I'd be saying, Lily, just slow down. Just you know.
Yes, that's one thing. They talk like machine guns. They're probably all members of NRA, actually.
Well, that's okay, because I get told sometimes I talk quite fast. But, you know, when you throw in a Geordie accent, it's into the mix.
Yes. So
have you got any phrases that, you know, I need to know about before I make my way?
Ho, hurry, hurry, a hammer over here.
In English?
Would you kindly pass
in
that
English?
Hammer?
What is that in English?
This is a subjective thing, this.
Now, I mean, I appreciate that line, Ian, but
is Tessa
ever going to be in a position?
It's from the patois. I say, Harold, would you mind passing your hammer over here?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's not going to help, is it, really?
It probably isn't.
You're presuming.
Is there anything easier, or, you know, a little bit more?
I think once, I was sitting on a bus and there's a group of pretty bright kids, teenagers, and one of them was leaving to get the train and leaving her friends and get to the station. And when she got to the end of the bus, she said, well, goodbye then, pet flower love and hinny.
That's it, pet. That's
the one. Oh, yes, sir. Yes. If you call people pet, you're all right.
I think that's quite sweet. I quite like that. It's quite warm, isn't it?
I mean, in Lincoln, it's duck, basically.
Yeah, all right, ducky.
Just be yourself, anyway. They'll accept you. They'll love you.
Aww.
Just say nice things around the castle and the roll over on the back and beam at the sky.
Okay, right.
And there we have it.
Everything's noted. Yeah. I'm ready for my trip to Newcastle.
Exactly. I
don't want you to come back to me in a month's time to complain like hell.
Oh, I won't. I'm sure I won't.
I feel as though there's a documentary waiting to be made there. In fact, we've got another Newcastle lass, Gwyneth Griffiths, who's joining us on next Wednesday's show. So I think we'll actually follow that through, which is actually just a week before you go.
I can get some more tips.
Yeah. How long are you going for? For how long are you going, I should say?
It's just for the weekend.
All right.
Yeah, it's just for the festival. It's a short weekend, so...
And what you said it's a placement. Does that mean you're actually doing work or just monitored?
So I'm doing voluntary work, so I think I'll be helping out with setting up and showing... people where to go when they arrive to the festival and things like that. And there's going to be journalists there and the events team, so I'll get kind of a mix.
You'll be practicing your interpeople skills, as they say.
Yes, most definitely. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
Honestly. When you're coming for a couple of days, is it weekend you're coming
up? Yeah, just the weekend.
Oh, wow. You'll have a good
Friday to the Sunday. So, and I think there's there's two different shifts, so I'll either be on morning to afternoon or afternoon to evening, so I should get a little bit of time.
Right. So, I don't know anything about how the BBC works, because
why would you?
I never
I mean, that's the problem. Do they know how?
It's in Gateshead, where the big...
No, it's not in Gateshead. Oh, the festival is in Gateshead.
Yeah, the festival, yeah.
Are you talking about the Sage?
Sage, that's it. That's where I'm based.
So you're going over the river?
Yes.
So you're not at the Pink Palace at all, right?
No, I was thinking when you
the
said
Pink
that,
Palace.
I was thinking, is that near?
No,
Gateshead, yeah.
The Sage is a better starting point to Seney Castle.
Oh, right, okay.
Just basically walk across the Millennium Bridge, which is it's an interesting bridge, actually. It raises its... the walking tier, so ships can get through.
Okay, wow.
Occasionally. And you can walk across, and you can take pictures from the middle of the town, because it's, you know, it hadn't been done before, really, from that angle anyway. Once you cross that bridge, you're at the quayside, which is one of the fun spots of the city, and you can walk up from there, you can walk up towards the Theatre Royal, which is up basically Walker Grey Street, and which is certainly one of the finest streets in Europe. If you want to, you can Google. If you go into,
do you know, we're looking.
Alex is already on it.
I'm pointing it out using.
I did have a little look on a map.
Where the Sage is, what it looks like.
It's lovely.
How you can actually cross the bridge.
So it'll give you a good idea. See,
I have had a little look because obviously I've had to book accommodation and everything. But it looks lovely. At the Ramada, it's just
very good. Very good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's very close.
It's a chain hotel.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm probably the worst person in the world to ask about Newcastle now. My first book I ever wrote was called The 60s Man, about a young man in Newcastle in the 60s, when I was young, and I just wrote it because I knew all the pubs, all the clubs, everything, where the shops were.
Yeah.
And if I tried to do that now, I couldn't name one.
No, I mean, I'm not very good with locations or names. I forget quite easily.
But
this is Lincoln. I do know Lincoln now. But I'm very, very close to the Sage. I think I'm in walking distance, so I'm all set.
Right.
Set and ready to go.
So it's going to be great. It's going to be a wonderful sort of time and one day.
Enjoy it. You'll meet people. You'll probably. What I advise young people to do is always try and keep in touch with people you meet.
Yes. Yeah.
Some of my best friends when I was a young journalist, I don't know where they are now.
Oh.
We didn't have social media like you do.
No, that is very true. That is one good thing about Facebook.
Ian, you did have the telephone and you do have letters, okay?
Yeah, people, you know how.
Yeah,
you know,
it is easy now, isn't it?
Especially in journalism, you're moving all over the same place.
Yeah, well, it's a competitive industry.
We were ugly mobile, Alex.
Well, that whole notion
I'm
of.
I'm not quite sure what that means. I think it means we moved about a lot.
Yeah, I don't know how journalists. Because I was just doing a day with Kate Hemingway the other day on Work Experience, and I was talking to her about when obviously you didn't have phones and everything, and if you have to do multiple interviews in a day and getting to and from, I mean, it must have been crazy.
It was totally different. Well, actually, people went out and met people
those days. Yeah, well,
there are journalists now who just don't go out the building, is what I understand.
No. It's quite sad, actually, I suppose.
Yes, it is. Certainly lose a lot. When I was 18, I was going out and actually meeting people and... And you learn quickly that way.
No, definitely.
You've got to.
It's scary out there.
It is
scary. You go out, you can catch cold.
I guess technology helps in one way because we can connect with people easier. But then we kind of lose that face to face communication a lot of the time.
It helps research as well. Once you, the thing about going on the internet to do research is you've got to know what to believe and what not to believe.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's
true.
And
that comes partly through experience, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, have to be careful.
I'm sure you'll have a lovely time and you'll do brilliantly. You've got a good personality.
I'll update you when I get back and definitely.
Yeah.
I see it more as a case of a sort of an initial sorte to find out whether it's worth us doing anything in Newcastle as a location report, really. Get something sort of.
Well, there looks lovely, doesn't it? The Sage.
It does
look quite.
But the camera never lies.
Well,
provided Man City aren't playing at home against us on St James's Park. I'll accommodate you.
One of these days. Had time. Maybe next time when we're up there, we can actually see Ollie and Obo.
Ollie and Obo. See, we talk about Fuzz a lot, but
Ollie
and Obo, how
the
are they doing?
First equivalents, exactly.
Yes. All our feline friends on Siren.
Yeah, precisely. not that we are against doggies in any way, shape, or
form. Oh, gosh, no. Love dogs.
Tessa, you've done so well. Would you like to put those last two questions to Ian?
I will do. Ian, have you had a enjoyable telephonic link this morning?
Yes, I did. It all started actually with a certain football match earlier in the week.
And will you be joining us again on the show next
week?
Has
it started the splutter there, Tessa?
Oh. That kind of
I don't splutter professionally. And I certainly wouldn't splutter over a lady's head. Never. In any way, shape or form. Carry on.
Will you be joining us again on the show next week?
I do hope so.
Oh, brilliant.
Especially if Man City lose again. I might get the bus down.